Good evening. Tonight, what sounds like very good news for thousands of visually impaired ex-service men and women. And beware blind bicyclists.
We're off. Whoa, bit of a wobble again.
Feel something turn
left. Left.
Tony Shearman falling for some new technology, but he will be back in the saddle later in the programme. Now, ever since it was founded during the First World War, what was then known as St Dunstan's has prided itself in offering a comprehensive service of care and rehabilitation to war-blinded veterans. But in the past, the eligibility rules for these benefits, regarded as far superior to what civilians would receive, were very tough. In particular, you needed to be able to show that your visual impairment was directly linked to your time in the services. But times have been changing, and in recent years, what's now known as Blind Veterans UK has been relaxing those rules, and in a current campaign called No One Alone, they're now actively seeking out ex-service personnel who are visually impaired, whatever the reason. The campaign coordinator, Andrew Jones, told me who would now be able to benefit.
We're aiming particularly at the Second World War generation, even though they're passing on now, but also the National Service generation. People who served perhaps 18 months, 2 years in the 1950s. And those people are now into their 80s and 90s and are perhaps suffering from age-related sight loss.
So remind us of the kinds of things that Blind Veterans UK will actually be offering.
We start off with a residential sort of induction programme where we make an assessment of somebody's needs, the way they're living, their support network. And it could be a very simple intervention of providing some gadgets and some reorientation within their own home for them to live perfectly independent lives. Other people might need computer equipment or training so they can use email, screen readers, so they are able to communicate as well. And there's a variety of training we offer, really depending on your individual circumstances.
So you will be offering them, in a way, the kinds of things that they might hope to get if they had not been veterans from the local authority?
Yes. Local authorities are very stretched at the moment. The sensory impairment teams are doing a fantastic job, and we're trying to partner with them to pathway people to us so we can take perhaps that burden on and provide solutions quicker than perhaps the local authority. The local authorities do magnificent work and will get round to it, but they have a lot of calls on their resources.
I mean, this is potentially, isn't it, an enormous undertaking, given the large number of people you yourselves think could benefit from it. I mean, how many people do you think you might be looking at if you take into account the National Service generation?
Research that we conducted last year with the University of Kent indicated there was over 65,000 what we call blind veterans, but really seriously visually impaired veterans. Currently, that rises during this decade to about 70,000 in 2020, and then drops quite substantially by 2030. So there is a drop-off, as you would expect, as that age gets older and mortality kicks in.
Mm. I mean, are you really financially equipped to provide this level of service to this potential number of people? What if they all come forward?
Well, that would obviously be a challenge, but over the last 6 months we've been really ramping up our recruitment of blind veterans, and we are finding it is a difficult audience to get to. They are quite isolated, they are quite elderly. We haven't seen a huge rush. We've seen a small increase over the last year, about 20% more people, and at that sort of level per year we can cope with the income that we are having. The British public over the last 5 years have been very generous to service charities, and fundraising for Blind Veterans UK has increased by 85% in the last 5 years. There are other organisations that have seen similar growth, British Legion, for example, with their Poppy Appeal, and also Help for Heroes. We are still spending more than we earn, though we do have some reserves which we are dedicated to spending to provide these services. Part of our reserves are our ring-fenced and an endowment fund for people who have been blinded in war, and they are sacrosanct. But we do have to adapt our service for people who are perhaps wanting their services provided in the community rather than in our centres, which has been traditionally the case.
Mm. Now, there was a time when the rules about St Dunstan's membership, as it used to be known, were extremely strict, and there were some very hard cases of people who, you know, couldn't get help because, for instance, their sight problem wasn't the direct result of military service, or because although they were engaged on military work, they weren't directly in the services. What's brought about what surely is a major change of attitude?
The volume of war blind, or people blinded from the services in a warlike activity, was diminishing hugely in the 1990s, because it was mainly a Second World War cohort and also the First World War cohort. And to be a viable organisation and utilise the skills right across the country, we wanted to expand our remit, and it was just a reinterpretation of our remit, so that anybody who has served is eligible for our help, as long as they have their sight loss is severe enough.
So if people have macular disease, or they've developed glaucoma or cataracts, well, those are the people you're looking for.
Yes, absolutely.
Have you actually made a calculation of the amount of people there may be who need your help? Because, of course, it's not only about the ageing process, it's about how many people are affected.
We are using two prime sources of information. We're using the RNIB source. They did a big in-depth study about causes of late-onset sight loss. And also we correlated all those figures with the British Legion's number of veterans in the UK and married the two up. And this figure of over 65,000 is very robust, because we did a similar study in Scotland in 2006, and we found that there were about 7,000 people with severe sight loss who were veterans. And if you multiply that, extract the figures, that's a similar figure that we're seeing 5 or 6 years later.
Andrew Jones. And if you think you might be eligible, we've got more information about the campaign on our website and also through our action line. Full details at the end of the programme. David Poyner is a case in point. As you'll discover in a moment, we'd invited David onto the programme for a completely different reason. But it turns out that he was made blind by a disease which he'd had since childhood, which struck during his time in the Royal Navy. We caught up with David on holiday in Devon, and he explained the difference Blind Veterans UK had made to his life.
When I first became blind, I was invited down for an induction week at the charity. And they introduced me to computer skills, how to get adaptive screen readers and how to use them. I also learned Braille. They demonstrate cooking skills, which fortunately I'd managed to do myself. But there was also practical things that I desperately wanted. And I went on a wood turning course with them. And they have the most fantastic craft training workshop. And all these things totally appealed to me.
And what difference would you say this help made to your life and your adaptation to being blind?
You can lead a perfectly normal life. You don't need any other help. You can have your independence. And I think that's the biggest thing, Peter, is that you can be yourself.
Right. Now, you were also, I think, a keen sportsman before you lost your sight, and they had a role to play in that too.
Yes, because I'd always been a high achiever in sport. In fact, I'd been a world referee in underwater hockey the month before I lost my sight. And they introduced me to archery. And that was a total change in my life. I'm now chairman of their archery club. I'm chairman of British Blind Sports Archery. I've been British champion for a number of years, and I've shot for Great Britain.
Which brings us to the reason we actually invited you on in the first place, is because just under a year ago you came onto the programme to draw attention to the fact that visually impaired archery enthusiasts were effectively being excluded from the Paralympics, which was on at the time, because it was being claimed there weren't enough of them to justify a fully competitive international competition. You were pointing out that this was because of the rules, which insisted on a way of categorising visually impaired archers, which made it unattractive to take part. Now, just remind us what the main issue was there.
Currently, the rules are, or were, blindfold only. Everybody, no matter what your sight category in sport or what your perception of sight was, as long as you were registered blind or partially sighted, you had to wear a blindfold to compete in the Paralympics.
Which a lot of people didn't really want to do.
Well, no. When you're registered blind, you get told to make as much use of what residual vision you've got as possible. And I thought that was excluding people in other categories that desperately wanted to shoot but didn't particularly want to wear a blindfold.
Now, you had some solutions to this, and I think you got some advice on the programme about a way to get around the problem, and you've had something of a success. Just explain what's happened.
all thanks to yourselves last year, I went down to the Paralympic Archery in London in August last year and had a meeting with World Archery and Paralympic Archery about my idea for the categories to hopefully move it forward. They were positive. And in June this year, World Archery held a seminar where they invited people from all over the world to discuss the way forward for visually impaired archery to be included into the Paralympics.
Because the idea was that they didn't want too many categories of blind archers. This is often a problem in Paralympic sport. What have you suggested?
Well, the suggestion was they wanted a minimum of two. And my idea was B1, which in sport is a category for, I suppose, loose terminology, someone who is totally blind, and they will still maintain wearing a blindfold. And then the other category is B2, B3, who have some residual vision but cannot see the target sufficiently to be able to aim at it.
Right.
And both these categories, B1, B2 and B3, will use what's called tactile sighting devices to line themselves up to the target.
So when do you think you will be able now to take part in a properly constituted international archery competition?
Well, they did say that the Olympics in 2016 is already finalised, and it would not be in the Olympics till 2020. But I guess that means that from 2014, any World Archery Paralympic event will be able to host the new categories.
An optimistic David Poyner.